Welcome to the Property Nomads podcast. I have a bumper episode today. I'm delighted to be joined by Malakit and Sanjay, otherwise known as Savoy's Properties. They both got a wealth of experience, and we're going to be talking about market conditions, market challenges, leaning on their experiences as well. Rather than me butchering an introduction, I'll hand it over and they can introduce themselves so you can understand a bit more about Savoy's. Malakit and Sanjay, welcome to the show, and the floor is all yours.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Rob. Yeah, so my name is Malakit. I'm a co-founder of Savoy's Properties. So Savoy's was actually founded by myself and Sanjay on the 1st of April 2020. But our journey actually goes back to when both myself and Sanjay were 11 years old. So we're actually school friends that ventured into property in our early 20s. So we've actually been in property for over 20 years. We've been developing for over 10 years. And we currently now, under the Savoy's banner, have over 500 tenants that we manage. We've won now 5 awards during the last 2 years. And we're actually very active in developments at the moment.
In terms of the awards, that's something I'd noted beforehand. I've noticed that you won awards in 2020, 2021. Was there any specific aspect of property that you won those awards for? Was it a specific deal, or was it just general all-round great business?
So we've won in 2020, if we look at the Property Investor Awards, so out of all the awards, they're the ones that are probably more respected between property professionals, because it's decided who the winner is actually decided by your peers. So you've got, I think, 26 property experts that actually have a look at your deals and your applications and see who's the worthy winner. In 2020, we won Commercial Property Developer of the Year. In 2021, we won Property Deal of the Year, which is one of the bigger awards, and we won Property Developer of the Year as well for developments under 5 million.
That must have been quite a good accolade to receive. Is that something that you set out to achieve, or again, just because of the quality of your work with your clients, it just happened?
It's not something that we actually looked at. When we started this Savoy's Properties, we actually used social media as a way where to just put basically developments, just the progress of developments and so on, onto just a portal. It was a way of, it was basically like our CV. So rather than us trying to send photos and so on over of projects, it's a way where we could point clients to just say, well, have a look at this. We've done this here. And even for the customers that we have, we've got some that are actually in Dubai and Singapore. So it's a way of them actually just seeing regular progress of their properties on social media. So it was just that. And literally, as we were doing this, we had someone from the awards contact us and say, you know, I think you guys should put your put these properties actually in some of these categories. So in 2020, we were actually finalists in 4 categories. In 2021, we were actually finalists in 6 categories.
So award-winning Savoy's Properties. It's great to speak to you with all the experience you have. Just before we get into where, you know, what's going on market-wise at the moment, you mentioned that you founded Savoy's in 2020, but you've both got a hell of a lot of experience before that. So what was it that made you come together to go under the Savoy's banner a couple of years ago?
So I think basically myself and Sanjay were at a crossroads. So we've been in property for quite a while, but we were outsourcing certain elements to third parties. And it was something that was a long while coming, but we decided to bring literally everything within house. So in terms of finding a property, the development of the property, the letting of it, the management. So it's one service, which is now under just one banner, and it just made people feel a lot more comfortable, because previously what we were doing was we were developing a site and then giving co-management of it to someone else. And it worked well and it didn't work well. And we just decided, look, you know, we want to give the best customer service to our customers. And the way to do that is to actually get control within our organization as a result, within those 2 years, we now have, we're 5-star rated on Google. We have over 100 5-stars. These are from basically our investors, our contractors, suppliers, and more importantly, the end users of our property. So the tenants that are within there. So for us, it's hugely satisfying that we took the right steps at the right time. And it's reflected in, obviously, in terms of awards, but more importantly, the feedback from our end users.
And being a bit of last sidebar before we go into, you know, things they stand at the moment, being a bit of a football nut as well, you've also partnered with Watford Football Club now because they're in the Premier, for people that aren't familiar with football, because they're in the Premier League at the time of recording. That's probably, I would imagine, also given you even better exposure than before. Is that something that you've seen or you've reaped the rewards of partnering with such a Premier League football club?
Yes. So I don't think you actually get business from actually being people seeing your banner within the stadium, but I think it's more reflective in the way you promote yourself, because it shows that you're not this small developer. More importantly, it was a way of, now when we're working with suppliers and clients, it was a way of actually taking them away for a game and for them to enjoy some Savoy's hospitality, courtesy of Watford Football Club. And it's, for us, myself and Sanjay have been football fans from a young age. So it was one of these bucket lists that we wanted to sort of check off. And it's actually, the reason we chose Watford Football Club was it's one of the closest clubs to where we're actually situated. And it's something that we feel, because Watford is such a small community and it's actually a family club, and it felt like it was the right fit for Savoy's.
Understandably so. I've driven past the stadium an abundance of times. It's a nice place. That being said, let's get off the foot. Let's get onto the property sort of stuff. So you were saying off air in your years of doing this, and again, date stamping is not something that we like to do that much, but we are recording this end of February 2022. You were saying that market conditions from a development point of view are chaotic at the moment. What, without sounding like I'm being too dumb, thinking of listeners that have been listening to this, why is the market from a development point of view, why is it that chaotic at the moment? And what have you seen that you've not seen before?
Well, you've got basically a situation where the government's printed loads of money, which has led to inflation, and then it's led to property inflation. So you're now seeing property prices rising at a faster rate than we probably experienced, say, in the last 10 years. In addition, you've got a situation where material costs have risen. We've seen some things go up 50%, but if you look as a general rule of thumb, it's probably an average of 25% increase. So if you budgeted 100K for a renovation of a property, you're literally looking at 125,000. So it's squeezing margins. And I know developers that are doing projects which were going to take 18 months, and it's taken something that looked like it was going to be quite lucrative, and it's literally, they're probably more or less just breaking even on this site. So it's very challenging in terms of, because of inflation, you're finding people that generally may not have bought properties previously in the past are now taking funds out of their bank accounts and putting them into a property. So it's led to like a shortage of properties on the market, which obviously impacts us, because if we're looking for properties for clients, we want to find something of value and where we can add some value too. So if properties are selling, say, 15-20% higher than what the market value should be, it just squeezes the margins down. But it's not something that's completely put a halt to our business, because we're actually able to think outside the box and look at avenues where maybe other investors aren't doing and finding great deals. So we've actually just this month in Feb, we've actually helped three clients exchange on a property. We'll be detailing these on our social media in the upcoming weeks. But we are finding deals. It's just made it a lot more challenging in the environment that we're operating in.
Do you see then from an economic point of view, I mean, well, you know, the worst inflation we've had in 40 years or whatever period of time it is. I mean, in my opinion, that's not going to be ridiculously sustainable by any stretch of the imagination. So what else are you doing, if anything, to sort of mitigate future risks? Like, for example, are you saying to clients or own projects that you're doing that actually you might want to have a bigger contingency just in case? So what steps are you taking there?
So we work in an environment where if we guarantee a price to a client, we actually stick with that price. So we do have a clause in there that, you know, if materials rise exponentially, we'll, you know, we can come back and review this. But over the course of 2021, we completed several properties for clients, and none of those we actually raised the price on. The way we mitigate it ourselves is we try to arrange fixed price contracts with the companies and individuals that we're working with. So that mitigates part of the risk, but then there's elements which, you know, we just have to bear in mind that it could go over, but they're on sort of smaller items, so it reduces our risk down.
And going back to the thinking outside the box, and again, feel free to share this if, you know, not giving away your sort of in-house secrets. In what ways can developers think outside that box? Is this by looking at, like, different PD rights? Anything there that you can elaborate on?
So in our perspective at Savoy, we treat basically property like it's a game. And that's not in a sort of sarcastic way. It's basically, if you were playing a video game, what you do is, you know, once you start playing it, you understand the rules, you understand sort of gray areas, and then you use what you've understood to your advantage. So if you go into property and you don't know what you're doing, you haven't spent time to look at PD rights, prior approval rights, you're going to find it a lot more challenging. What we do is we actually, if there's some new legislation that come in, so like Class MA, we want to ensure that we understand that fully, because other individuals that don't understand it fully will miss something that we can actually take advantage of. And I'll give you a prime example. Is we did a site in Buckinghamshire, which when most developers looked at it, said, oh, you only can get 5 flats in him. And then myself and Sanjay had a look at him. Well, actually, you know, if we take advantage of X, Y, and Z, we can actually get 10 flats. So we actually did get 10 flats. And as a result, that particular property helped us win Property Developer of the Year at the Property Investor Awards in 2021.
So what I'm taking from that is that the more homework that you're doing behind the scenes, that can then give you a competitive advantage as such, because then you're going to be able to see things or spot potential where other people might not be able to spot that, and that comes down to hard work, due diligence, and education in this instance. Is that a fair summary of that?
Yeah, it's literally just this. Yeah, it's a fair summary. So it's, you can effectively put it back to you being at school. The better you're doing in an exam comes down to how well prepared you are that you go into it. So you've got, I think, being educated and understanding the environment that you're working in is very crucial. The other bit to be successful is the power team that you have around you, because, you know, inevitably, if you do well, it'll be on the back of these individuals or organizations that you're working with. And obviously, if you don't do so well, it'll be a result of your team as well. So your power team's crucial, but you're the driving force. You need to understand the rules and of the environment that you're working in.
Very, very true. I completely agree with that. It's very easy to, you know, sit around and start blaming others. You know, I've just seen, you know, people are, we love doing that, I think, a lot, by sitting down and blaming others, but ultimately you have to take responsibility you know, yourself for where you are, you know, no matter your circumstances. In regards to, or with regards to inflation, you were just saying before we started recording that at the moment you're finding deals can be slightly challenging because there's a lot of chaos. Has that just been caused by inflation? And do you think people have got, you know, pie in the sky numbers in their head? So, you know, an agent might get around and say, oh, you could get a couple of million pounds for this. And, you know, that seller's got that in their head and it's only worth a million. All the usual stuff. Is that something that you've come across quite regularly recently, given everything that's going on economically?
I'll jump into this one, yeah, because I think market's done enough talking. Basically, I think there's a couple of factors that you have to take in consideration. So, number one, obviously, we had the pandemic, and what happened there was a lot of people got bounce back loans and got money from the government. So, people have extra pot of cash sat there, and a lot of people have realized that you need to diversify your income. You can't just be, you know, dependent on one income. Coronavirus has taught us that anyway. So, people had jobs, they lost jobs. So a lot of people now have got into properties, excuse me, and they've thought, actually, we need to get into the property market. So because of that, I think that's caused it's made it difficult for us to actually source properties. As before the pandemic, it was a little bit easier. Then you had your stamp duty taken away for a short period of time, which obviously put house prices up. Everybody was buying houses, moving. People realized they don't want to live. Some people don't want to live in flats. They want to live in houses now because they want to have gardens. They realized it with all the restrictions that we had. So I think that's been a major part to play in it.
In terms of, I've lost my train of thought. That's that's not good. That's not a good thing. No, I completely agree with where you're coming from. I just think that sometimes it takes, you know, such negative circumstances to people to open their eyes. You know, if you leave your cash sat in the bank at the moment because of the rate of inflation, you know, you're losing value daily on that. So you need to get that into assets that are going to work for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we say on our newsletter, you know, obviously we're not IFAs or anything like that, but that diversification is important. Maybe you want a bit in property, maybe you want a bit in, you know, what I call proper money, metals, gold, silver, etc. Seeing it from the other side, you know, what's going on, what's coming down the road. I don't like to be doom and gloom, but with the amount of currency that's been printed by not just the Bank of England, but, you know, worldwide.
Yeah.
We got a few issues coming up. But in terms of opportunities, when you look at that, and I think there's going to be a horrific crash coming, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to happen at some point. When that happens, I imagine then that you'll probably be in a very, very good position with various clients and yourselves to be able to do what most people do and clean house effectively. Is that something that you've taken into consideration at all?
I think we could probably both talk, but my answer would be no. We don't look forward to a crash design thing that we could take advantage of people's you know, unfortunate circumstances. That's one thing we don't do. But to answer your question a different way, there's always opportunities, whether there's a good situation or a bad situation. So I don't know about just sort of, you know, buying properties if we have a crash. We sort of protect ourselves by investing in properties as HMOs. So when people have gone from a normal buy to let, they invest in HMOs because they want more income. So passive income as well. So we sort of invest in HMOs and different properties like this to create more of a passive income for ourselves. With that income, then we can look at deals, no, not dependent on you know, the circumstances, but just say any time. We tend to buy sort of 25, 30 deals a year anyway for ourselves. So we're always, whether there's been, you know, the pandemic, when it happened, I don't know if Marcus told you, we had 10 sites going as soon as it, you know, the restrictions hit us. So we're always in the market anyway. So we don't look at these opportunities. And I'll probably have to sort of disagree with you. I know there'll be a crash, but I don't have to be a major crash. There could be a crash, but I don't think it'd be a major. I mean, in London where we invest, I can't see the market crashing by 50%, for example. But yeah, I hope that answers your question.
No, it does. Maybe I should have phrased it slightly better in the first place from my side. you know, it's, again, as we say, that there there will always be opportunity there and thereabouts. So yeah, maybe I should have phrased that.
No, there's always opportunities. I mean, at the moment, if you look at the opportunities that we've had, so with the pandemic, you've had a lot of commercial units become available. So ourselves, we actually invest in those properties. We repurpose them and do what we can with them to actually generate more income. So there's always opportunities, you know, whether the market's doing really great or it's not. It's just depending. I think what Marcus said before is you have to know what you're looking for. You have to know what's your angle and what's your exit. So that's what we have the experience, you know, of actually looking at deals and why people come to us saying, look, can you help us? Because you've been in the market and you know what you're looking for. So it sort of helps us out.
On HMOs, I've been speaking to people recently about this, with the, you know, gas and electric prices going up, how, as a business, how have you been able to take that hit as such? Have you increased rents? Have you, what have you been able to do to manage to stabilize things your end from those increases?
So what we typically tend to do is, with HMOs in particular, we try to fix most of our costs going forward. So like mortgages, we tend to use 5-year fixes, because the whole purpose of once we develop a HMO is you want to be producing decent cash flow and you want to mitigate most of the elements that are outside of your control. So we fix our mortgages, we fix our utilities. So at the moment, a lot of our utilities are on 3 or 5 year fixes. However, we do have a few that are now, I think they're outside their price cap period, but we were unable to switch to any products until, I believe, the 1st of April, because the government's put a price cap in place to help individuals and companies. Now, going forward, what we've found is utility prices have gone up, but what we've seen is rents for some of the newer HMOs that we're producing, the rents are a lot higher now than what they were, say, a year ago, 2 years ago. So as rooms are now becoming empty, we're marketing them at the market rate, which is, for example, if a room was £600, it would be sort of £650 or £675. So if we take bear that in mind, it will mitigate these price increases that are coming into the market.
Makes perfect sense to me. Thank you for explaining that. It's falling in line with what a few people, other HMO people, have said. I've got to stop saying in terms of, because I'm just using that phrase all day today. Apologies for that. Going back to planning, over the years, of course, we've seen, you know, various changes in class use. I think the government wants to, you know, try and make things easier in terms of planning, Class E, Class MA. Do you find, and again, going into your experience, do you find that government intentions with that are normally okay, but sometimes it's local councils that are the issue? Or do you think the government has got to try and do more to open up as many planning avenues as possible, that, you know, supply in this country's far short of demand? What are your views on that, guys?
Views are the planning system within the country is broken. Planning departments aren't really planning departments. They come across to us being more as planning control, because they look at opportunities to say no more than saying yes. And I think the government knows this, and for them to try to make an impact on the deficit in terms of, you know, the demand and supply of properties, they've brought in these prior approval rights, which now help level the playing field. And it actually provides some certainty to a developer, because if you're buying a piece of land, it looks ripe for planning. You put your application in and everything's pending on this. You've got money, you're paying finance on this land. And if it's refused, then it's a uphill battle from there. What the new Class MA does is you actually understand that the council can only fail it on, say, a handful of reasons. And if you can ensure, you know, you meet the sound requirements, you meet, you know, the environmental risk aspect, you meet the parking, so on, they won't actually be able to fail these applications. So we think, see this as a positive change, but we believe more needs to be done and the government needs more to happen to allow them to make these changes within planning system in the UK.
Hypothetically speaking, I don't know if you've ever been asked this question before. If you were in government shoes and you had control of planning, what would you do to make that process easier for developers?
I think literally they need to add a certain amount of certainty. What would happen? What's happening with planning applications at the moment for, say, new builds and some of these bigger schemes is they're literally just being pushed back. We know developers that are waiting over a year for a planning decision. With the, obviously, with what the government's done with prior approval is they've got 56 days, and if they don't pass it, then it's deemed passed anyway. So they need to now put an emphasis on planning departments across the whole of the UK to actually process a lot of these applications quicker, make it a little bit more transparent, because at the moment it's very unclear. It's a reason why myself and Sanjay tried to shy away from full planning applications, because if they failed, then you know you're in an uphill battle and there's no certainty for us. So our idea is we take a project on, we sort of turn it around within 6 months and we're back out, we can start something else. If we go down the full planning route, you could have your funds tied up for over a year, and it's not as straightforward as a developer.
And I guess when you know, if you're doing that project on behalf of a client, you know, per se, then again, the client's going to also need certainty as well. So to me, that sounds like it's a case of, as you've alluded to many times already in the episode, doing your homework, education, know your end result, know your exit strategies. If you've got all that, then you're on the right track already.
Yeah, no, 100% agree. So I think we can't emphasize how much being educated and understanding planning rules are to being a successful property developer. It's the basis of what myself and Sanjay have used to be successful. And as new changes come in, if you're one of the first to understand them, you're one of the first to utilize them. For example, thinking back in 2013, the office to residential, so the B1A to C3 rules came in. I think myself and Sanjay were one of the first to take advantage of that in the patch that we're in. And it took probably about 18 months before everyone was aware of what was going on, and then prices then rose significantly on offices. But I think myself and Sanjay probably brought probably 3 or 4 offices within the first 6 months of those rules coming in.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. Staying ahead of the game effectively, which, as we've all said, is important. Do you do the same with, just before we start wrapping up, do you do the same with HMOs, i.e., you're in an area where you don't necessarily have Article 4, where you know that, you know, again, you've got that level of certainty that you can go through things quite sensibly, or even if you're, you know, creating a large HMO, you might have to go through planning. How does the HMO side work for you guys?
So it's exactly the same as if we're doing commercial. So we rather focus on either existing HMOs within Article 4, because even if it's a 4-bed, we can scale this up to a 6-bed without having to go through planning. Otherwise, we'll be focusing on non-Article 4 areas. And our perception is literally most of the country eventually will be Article 4. So it's, and when it becomes Article 4, it becomes more of a sort of gold mine. And what we've experienced within our patches, the areas that became Article 4, the value of the HMOs are significantly higher than the neighboring areas it surrounds. So you want to be one of the first you want to actually get a HMO within a non-Article 4 area pretty soon, because I think, and the more I see online, more altitude areas are coming in. And I believe you're based down south in Brighton, and most of the city, I believe, is now Article 4.
Correct. Yeah. No, it's, as we've said, that will always create opportunity. So thank you for that advice. Guys, it's been insightful. Thank you. Really, thank you very much for your time. It's always great to be able to talk property, chat property, especially with award-winning developers. If people want to find you or get in contact with yourselves, how can people do that?
Sure. So we're most active on Instagram and LinkedIn. So if you want to get in contact with us, you can give us a follow on there. If you want any advice, you can DM us. You'll be able to follow our projects from start to finish through the course of the year. Yeah, and it's been a pleasure being on your podcast, Robert.
Thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate it. We'll put links in the show notes, as we always do, so people do go and follow Savoy's properties. But Malkit, Sanjay, any final words of wisdom?
Yeah, so I would just say, just a recap on what we've been covering during the course of the podcast, is literally you want to ensure that you treat basically property like you treat a game, by understanding the rules, understanding what you can do, what you can't do. And most importantly, you want to build up that knowledge, build up your power team, and then just go out there and get into property soon as, because I think the longer you wait, the more difficult it's going to become. And I think it's an impact of obviously this inflation that we're seeing at the moment.
I appreciate that. Awesome stuff. Thank you very much. Heed that advice, people. I do get in touch with Savoy's as well. Follow them on their channels. They've got a lot of great stuff going on. But Sanjay, Malkit, thank you very much.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, Robert. Take care.
Thank you.